When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Happy Mama Movement Podcast. I'm Amy Taylor Cabaz, mama, journalist, coach, and founder of Mama Rising. This podcast is a space of community and collaboration. We gather stories of matrescence, motherhood, womanhood, and change told by our Mama Rising coaches and mothers around the globe, in the knowing that through our stories, we can begin to heal and change the way the world sees, values, and supports mothers everywhere. So, welcome to the Happy Mama Movement. Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to the Happy Mama Movement. Today, I am speaking with author, acclaimed journalist, and mama of three, Lucy Jones. If you're in the UK, you would probably know her name and her book, which is creating such a phenomenal momentum around the work of matrescence. Her latest book is called Matrescence: The Metamorphosis of Pregnancy, Childbirth, and Motherhood. And I love the way she has chosen that word, the metamorphosis. If you've been here for a while, you will know what matrescence is. But what Lucy does in her book and in the conversation you're about to hear is really help us see how in the natural world and in the ecological system around us, in our earth and the way it works, this process of metamorphosis and this process of the loss and then finding of yourself again is actually one of the most natural things in the world, if only we talked about it differently and supported each other differently and had our systems around us do it differently. I loved, loved, loved this conversation with Lucy, and I know you will too. Enjoy. Lucy, thank you so much for joining me and our beautiful community around the world to talk about matrescence. Now, most of the people who have been listening to this for a while will know exactly what matrescence is, but from your point of view and all of your phenomenal research that you have done, if you were to explain what this word is to someone for the first time, how would you describe it?
Such a pleasure to be here, Amy. Thank you. So I would describe it quite simply as the process of becoming a mother, the transition into motherhood. I was introduced to the work, the word matrescence, through Alexandra Sachs's New York Times piece, and I immediately bought the original book, edited by Dana Raphael, with the essay in, with the word matrescence from the 70s. And I found it just, like I'm sure you and all your listeners, transformative. So I would really just describe it like that. I mean, I like how Dana Raphael described it as an experience that changes a woman's identity physically, psychologically, emotionally, socially, ecologically. and matrescence, it's a bit like adolescence or senescence, the metamorphosis of change.
And when you found this yourself, were you a mother? Is that why you went searching for that word? And what was happening with your own matrescence identity shift at that time?
Yeah, so I My first child was born in 2016. I'd always wanted to have children, and I was overjoyed to be pregnant and very fortunate. I didn't know very much about motherhood. I don't think any of us do, because it's so hidden and invisible. But my impression was at this point was that pregnancy was a experience where my body would be like a box, or a kind of pot in which she would grow, and then she would be born, and I would be the same. I would mother intensely for 9 months, and then go back to work as normal, and you know, nothing would change. And I found the experience of pregnancy and then birth and early motherhood so seismic, just so bewilderingly massive. Like the bigness of it felt so kind of crazy against the smallness of how it seemed to be presented. So, you know, classic culture in the UK, bounce back culture, you know, 6 week check, you're expected to be completely fine. There's no kind of structural support really in terms of rituals or rites. And I just, in that first year, I felt so different. I felt like everything had changed. My brain, my body, obviously, my attention, my sense of self, who I was, felt like one of the images I use in the book is like when a caterpillar dissolves in a cocoon or a chrysalis, it becomes a kind of goo. Although some things do remain, I just felt like this goo in a chrysalis. I was diagnosed with postnatal depression, as many women are. I found being alone with a baby every day very isolating, quite lonely, really hard to soothe a crying baby. Really, breastfeeding didn't come easily, birth was intense. I thought motherhood would be a kind of pastel-hued, easy, not easy, but that it would be harmonious or calm. And instead it felt like this huge rupture. And I felt very ashamed at the time of how confused I was and discombobulated. And then I read this piece in the New York Times by Alexandra Sachs, The Birth of a Mother, and came across this word matrescence. And for the first time, my shoulders just dropped, and I felt like I could take a deep breath and just think, this is what it is. This is a thing. This is, I'm not going mad or overreacting. Like, this is a transition. This is something that my culture is kind of neglecting and disavowing. And that was hugely transformative. So my book Matrescence, it's very much about my own matrescence. And I say I'm only an expert on my own matrescence. And in the book, I bring in pieces of research that relate to myself. I'm the kind of organizing principle, because I could only do it like that in these years of early motherhood. It seems, you know, as you and your listeners will know, that we are in this time of a great flourishing of science about matrescence and early motherhood and the caregiver brain and the parental brain and so on. So it felt like a really interesting research subject, as well as something I needed to write to try and make sense of what was happening to me.
Yes.
Sorry, that's a long answer.
No, it's beautiful. It's such a beautiful answer. And I think that's what all of us feel when we finally find this word, is it makes sense what we're finally we have a word of what we've been going through. And I want to explore with you in a moment what you found in that research, because, you know, for many years now I've been speaking to people's experiences, research and understanding of matrescence, whether it's how our brain changes, what it does to our relationship, what it does to our spiritual perspective. But you in your book have brought in some even more divine different insights that I'd love to talk to you about in a moment. But first, I love the way that you have described the words you've used to describe how our culture and society have ignored this. You were talking about how hidden and invisible this experience is, and also just how much we have neglected to even look at and explore and talk about this experience that, you know, every single mother has been through, and we all have come from mothers. It's mind-blowing that such a core part of our human experience has been so invisible and neglected. In your own research and now how you look at that now, what does that feel like to really recognize how invisible it is?
I think it's been really huge for me. It's kind of upended so much of what I thought I knew about the world. You know, I thought that, you know, my husband and I were equal, and then I had a baby and realized that, you know, he's a wonderful partner, wonderful father, but, you know, realize that within the institution of motherhood, if feminism is unrealized, and within patriarchal motherhood, we are still oppressed and I think taken advantage of and overburdened. And also, you know, it's not just that care work and mother work is devalued. For me, it was also that it was a very interesting experience. Like the experience of being pregnant and giving birth and care, you know, raising children, for me is like the most interesting experience of my life. Like, very socio-political, very intellectually demanding, extremely difficult in the context of the kind of isolated, intensive institution of motherhood. But I kind of felt that, you know, where were all the stories? Where was all the drama of like childbirth in the text that I read when I read like literature at university? Where were all these stories of the mothers? Like, where was maternal subjectivity? Like, this is the primary relationship for most people.
Yes.
Like, it's so interesting. It's so dramatic. It's so.
Did you get an answer to that question? Because I remember asking the same thing. Like, why aren't there whole departments dedicated to this at every university around the world? What was your answer when you asked that?
I think it's such an interesting question, Amy. And yeah, I'd love to know what you think. I think the answer is probably really multifaceted. I think that of the maternal has been suppressed in a way, particularly kind of in the post-industrial revolution, where you know, pre-industrialization, we were in much more kind of collective care structures. Industrialization kind of reduced the family to the fundamentals. Men were less involved in family life. Kind of kin networks were kind of split up. People going into factories and cities and so on. And there you see the production and creation of this new kind of maternal ideal, who is kind of sentimentalized, self-sacrificing, the kind of angel in the home. And definitely where I am in the UK, that idea of your role, it feels so prevalent. And actually, I think, you know, in our modern day, that idea of, you know, the self-sacrificing woman who raises children is perhaps, and this is something that Andrea O'Reilly has argued really well, you know, it's almost even more powerful now after women kind of won rights to get into the workplace, feels like in order for society to keep women doing most of the work in the home, we have to have this like very very strong like super mum maternal myth. It kind of keeps us in check, keeps us feeling guilty, keeps us not asking for change. So I guess that's one of it. And then I think, you know, we look at second wave feminism, you know, second wave feminists won so many rights for some women. But there was this like matrophobic kind of sense of needing to detach women from maternity in order to kind of win equal rights with men. And I think through that process, something was lost, or, you know, the experience of being like an embodied, the embodied experience of pregnancy, birth, early motherhood is kind of inconvenient. So I think, I mean, for me, in my like liberal feminist upbringing, it was nothing about motherhood. You know, it was all about breaking the glass ceiling, being a girl boss, all that. Yeah, it just felt, it was so absent, maternal. That's why, like, I feel really excited that there seems to be this, you know, and as I say, you've been part of it for years, this fifth wave of bringing, you know, the maternal into the public again and into feminism, and trying to, you know, keep fighting for equal rights, but also recognising that, you know, some women do want to be at home looking after their children, and you know, there's, you know, it's you can't really be equal within the experience of maternity. It has to be something more clever and more nuanced.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, you and I briefly spoke about this. There does seem to be a wave of momentum around this at the moment. I have been talking about this for a number of years, and the difference, even just because post-COVID, finally there's this rumbling, it feels like the early days of the big change, the big movements where the people on the ground are starting to talk about it and then talk to each other, and then others are noticing it. And then we have books like yours published where it's actually acknowledged in the mainstream press that there's something going on. And then workplaces are starting to hear it and noticing these rumblings. I feel like we're something's changing, and it's incredibly exciting, but it's huge. It is absolutely, it's like turning the Titanic in a way, sometimes I feel, the level of change that is going to be needed so future generations of mothers know what this is but experience it differently is huge.
Absolutely. It really is. And I think that like one of the things that I've noticed since publishing Matrescence, it was published in the last summer in the UK. So I've had a lot of correspondence from women since, which has been incredibly gratifying. And, you know, so much, the impression I'm getting is that so many women have felt very silenced, very shamed, very, and this was my experience too, like, I felt so ashamed that I was finding this experience, which was meant to be the best experience of my life, and that, you know, the defining moment of, like, you know, in terms of conservative patriarchal thinking of being a woman. And every day, I love my baby so much, but I found the conditions within which I had to mother her, I just didn't feel like I'd evolved for it. Like, my nervous system felt utterly overloaded. And I think, like, you know, that shame, which other people feel in different ways, it stops you connecting with people. And I think that actually we're even at a stage now where breaking those feeling rules, which is like Arlie Hochschild's phrase, the feeling rules which we have, that's actually a really big deal to be able to, you know, say, be able to express your anger or your discontent with the institution of motherhood without feeling like you're complaining about your child, you know. I think that, like, Adrian Rich's concept of, like, delineation of the experience of motherhood with the institution of motherhood is so helpful.
Yes.
Because none of us want to complain about our beautiful, perfect children. It's not that. It's something different. It's the institution. It's the,
yes,
you know, it's the structures and the systems. But I think we've even got quite a long way to go before women feel, you know, there's something weirdly oppressive about modern motherhood. And it must be, you know, I mean, I'm sure you'd have something to say about this, but, like, comparison and social media and, yes, the tenets of intensive motherhood being so intense. I just think there is this, like, collective reservoir of power and rage and connection just, like, waiting to,
I know,
you know, maybe it's already spilling, you know.
It gives me goosebumps. It's like, when it, well, you know, circling back a little bit to why we were saying before, why this isn't spoken about, why aren't there institutions dedicated to this, why aren't there universities studying this, I almost feel like that's part of the answer, Lucy, because if you start to talk about it and tap into it and open the door and get women's voices, mothers actually be able to voice this, holy hell, watch out, it is going to come. And I feel like that is also known at some level in our culture and society, that there is a rumbling, an anger, an isolation. And if that begins to be changed and invited to be spoken about, I mean, it's why I say, and it sounds melodramatic, but I deeply believe it, you know, matrescence has the potential to change the world. Because if we start talking about this, guess what else we're going to start talking about? Guess what else we're not going to be ashamed to say out loud? Oh, now that gives me goosebumps.
I feel the same, and that's so beautifully put. Because I think, like, if you look at matrescence and if you look at how our societies treat the vulnerable, how our societies consider dependence, interdependence, interconnectedness, care, it's very revealing, you know, on so many levels, in terms of racial, class, socioeconomic discrimination and disadvantage. It's like a kind of, it illuminates the kind of dark corners of our society and shows it up for what it is. And I really think it can trouble so many of the ideas that our culture and society cling to and that just aren't serving us anymore, you know, like hyper-individualism, kind of, you know, ideas of infinite growth, ideas of kind of the nuclear family, and the kind of fundamental philosophy that at least I feel like I marinated in my culture and society of self-sufficiency, self-reliance, you know, not needing anyone, you know, very focused on kind of consumerism and getting ahead and competition. And this sense as well that we are apart from nature and we are above nature and we have evolved out of our kind of wild selves. And, you know, once you give birth, you know that that's not true. You know that we're animals and actually we are just like other animals in that we need each other. In fact, we need each other more because we're humans and we're social animals. And the kind of powerful leading structures which want to separate and exploit us and have done for centuries, really, since the Enlightenment and so on, which also underpin predatory capitalism, colonialism, imperialism, with a sense of superiority and hierarchy and domination.
Yes.
So I feel that this matrescence and, you know, thinking about what it's like to be our dependency, facing up to it, could be very powerful. Troubling of these ideas that are,
that's right, that's hold, it feels like it's holding it all together. So let's bring in the natural world. One of the beautiful things and one of the, I think, unique contributions that your work has made in this space, as far as my research and reading has done, is looked at the natural world, the ecological system, animals, the different ways that this transformation, this change that we experience as mothers is honoured and recognised and processed in the natural world. So can you explain to our readers the rabbit hole that you went down in that way and what you found?
Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you. So I'm mostly a kind of science, environment, nature type health writer. My previous book was a book about nature and mental health, and I'm just a complete wildlife nut, and I'm like happiest in the woods looking at moss and lichen and so on. I've always been obsessed with nature, well, in my adult life. And before I became a mother, before my matrescence, I was very attracted to the idea of kind of natural motherhood, natural parenting, natural birth, you know, breastfeeding, that I would naturally know how to mother. Like that idea was very appealing to me. And actually my experience was quite different. It was, you know, birth was this pretty brutal, violent experience. Breastfeeding didn't really work out. I had like physical issues, which meant I couldn't exclusively breastfeed, which I felt a lot of shame about. My baby cried for hours every day. She probably had colic. And it was a real awakening for me, because I was like, well, this is natural, actually. You know, there's violence in nature, and, you know, nature is, cesareans are natural, and, you know, cuckoos pushing birds out of nests is natural. And it kind of gave me more of a like kind of gothic, almost punk sense of the natural world. And what I would do is I read like these science magazines. I never find anything about the maternal experience, really. Sometimes about postnatal depression, but you know, it's so lacking everywhere. But I'd always find myself drawn to these particular moments of change and process in the natural world. So like I said before, I became really obsessed with this idea of goo in a caterpillar, in a cocoon, in a chrysalis, because I felt that I was undergoing this huge metamorphosis, and it felt so uncomfortable. I had no idea who I was, and everything felt so new in like this bizarre way, where I felt like my culture was saying to me, you know, back to normal, look normal, get your body back, get back to work, and so on. So because I couldn't find those narratives really in our human culture, I just grounded myself in those moments in the natural world. So the cocoon, volcanoes, and how unpredictable and violent they are. Spiders who eat their own mothers. Sea squirts that go through this number of metamorphoses, and it's unclear which is the actual one. So I thread these ecological vignettes through the book, because they helped me to understand myself in the wider earth and realize that actually process change is a hallmark of the world, and it's normal and it's natural, and it's going to happen, and it's probably going to feel weird, but that's okay. And then I guess the other reason was my matrescence was like the most ecological experience of my life. I understood for the first time really how, you know, I was a being in relationship with other people, and I was really I needed people. Of course my baby needed me, and I just kind of saw these threads of connections in a different way, and that also went as well in kind of socially. I found myself very in those early months of feeling so open and so vulnerable and so paranoid and, you know, sensitive to judgment, sensitive to anything. you know, I really realized that, you know, how social like my brain was in terms of being influenced by other people, and you know, even these ideas like, oh, I had this idea that I had to be this like completely self-sacrificial mother, you know, always there, that there was no capacity for love as a mother. You know, I had to unlearn all these ideas. So the ecological as well was, I mean, it's, sorry, it's a bit long-winded answer, but it was kind of trying to make a comment about how, you know, we're not atoms or units. We are so in relation with ideas and people and, you know, all of these things.
Oh, I love it. I have so much to reflect on that. But even just picking up that last point, you know, it also shows us that not only have we changed, but our environment around us needs to change, and how we interact with others interchange and change through this experience. Because again, the world we live in, not only are we isolated through this matrescence transformation, but we are told that the rest of the world needs to see us the same. You know, our interaction with our environment can't change. And everything that you show in your book and what you've just described there again is like, but that's not how it works. When we re-emerge from our chrysalis, then of course the world sees us completely different. Our role is different. The way we act is different. The way we interact is different. And how vastly wrong we've got that in so many ways. And when you were describing this as well, before reading your book, I didn't know much about any of that, which was why it was so exciting and equally soothed my own judgment of this experience even more. My eldest has just turned 16, and I am still processing the the violent and under-recognized and neglected experience that I had then. And so even reading it now, it's like there was another layer of, ah, oh, wow, this is the way it's meant to be, and this is why I felt the way I did. But before reading your work, it reminded me of just even connecting with the idea of the seasons, Lucy, was such a turning point, recognizing that there is a winter and there is a summer. It sounds so simple, but before going down this path of trying to understand what has happened to me, I just assumed it was all linear. You know, it's just you keep growing. And if there is a winter or if there is a death or of a season of dryness or depletion or whatever it is, then there was something wrong with me, because the world has told me that it's only ever growth and it's only ever forward. And this is what is so disconnected in what we teach our children and each other, that this idea of that it is totally natural to go through these really big, violent at times, unsettling experiences and changes, but you do emerge new.
So beautiful to hear you say that. And when you were talking, it made me think of you know, how rest is so not part of that kind of cultural idea, you know. And you know, in early motherhood, kind of, you know, you're kind of prized if you can get back out there and get back on your feet, and how rest is seen as you know, something lazy, and it's all connected, I'm sure, to our, you know, the fact that economic profit interests just govern so much of our political structures. But, you know, rest is radical. And I mean, I think that's one of the, like, one of the most incredible things about matrescence for me has been being able to break out of some of, or try and break out of some of those ideas. And like you say, learn, even through, like, you know, if you live with children, you know that they're going through a season, you know, every season, you know, in one day, or that there are these different shades and phases, and, you know, that's just life. It's just, it's a kind of more authentic way of seeing the world.
I love that. When I first found this word years ago and I started to work with Dr. Aurelie Athan, around understanding matrescence, and she really guided me to understand my own experience of it and then develop Mama Rising and put this out into the world. She said to me, Amy, for this to really, you know, hit critical mass, for this to really create movement and change, we're going to need to come to it from all different angles. We're going to need the science. We're going to need academia. We're going to need corporate policy. We're going to need books. We're going to need stories. We're going to need, you know, all of the different layers of approaching this for it to finally change the way we look at motherhood. And that's why when Dana Raphael first, you know, looked at this and created this understanding of matrescence in the 70s, it didn't take off, is because now is the time where we need all of these different approaches. And it feels like that's what your work is doing as well. It's come to it from yet another unique insight, another beautiful way to understand what is happening. And we all need to be doing this in our own way. We need to be having these conversations about this in all different ways, in all different corners of the globe, in all different languages, in all different understandings, so we can really create this change. So I want to say thank you. Your book was part of that for me, to understand this in a different way, and I know it's been received like that in so many places around the world in the same way. So thank you for being a part of this wave together. This is how we do it.
That's really lovely to hear. And I think that's it's this wave, isn't it? And you know, there's lots of artists and there's filmmakers. Yes. And there's,
like, I know, it's so exciting.
And, you know, cartoonists and it's time for change.
It's time for change. It's happening. Here it comes. Thank you so much. Again, I will put all the details in the show notes of how people can find your book and your work, depending on where you are in the world. And thank you again for this amazing conversation, Lucy.
It's such a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, as always, for being here and listening to these conversations of matrescence and motherhood. There really is a movement happening. Change will take time, but the more we share these conversations with each other, speak to each other about matrescence, send the links to these podcasts to your friends and to your sisters and your community, the quicker this change that we so desperately need will happen. So please, if you have a moment, subscribe to this podcast on your podcast player, leave a review, share it with your friends. This is how we get the word out there. And as always, click on the show notes to see where you can read and access Lucy Jones's work, and let us both know on Instagram and on social media how this interview impacted you. Thank you for being here once again. See you next week. And if you would like to work with a coach on your own experience of matrescence, please go to mummarising.net and explore our directory of phenomenal coaches, workshop leaders, space holders and facilitators around the globe. You can also explore our Global Matrescence Foundation and consider donating so a mama in need can access the support of one of our coaches and still ensure that our coaches receive the income and support they need so they can continue to work in this way. And finally, if you would like to be a coach, a facilitator and a matrescence activist in your own community, jump on our wait list for our next intake of the Mama Rising Facilitator Training at mummarising.net. Thank you for being here and being part of this movement. Until next week, bye.
Mom. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.